The World's Great Novels. Some may think of it as a child's classic, but actually, it's one of the keenest political satires of all time. The NBC University of the Air brings you a radio edition of Gulliver's Travels by Jonathan Swift, another in our series of dramatizations of books that live, the world's great novels.
My name is Lemuel Gulliver. For 16 years and 7 months, I sailed the seas, first as a surgeon and then as captain of several vessels. In the year 1699, I accepted an offer from Captain William Pritchard, master of the Antelope, who was making a voyage to the South Seas. I shall not trouble you with the particulars of our adventures in those seas. Let it suffice to say that in our passage, we ran afoul of a tropic storm and were shipwrecked. What became of my companions, I cannot tell, but conclude that they were lost. For my part, I swam as fortune directed, and was pushed forward by wind and tide to a point where I found myself within my depth. When I finally struggled to shore, I was in so weak a condition that I lay down on the grass and fell asleep. Some hours later, I was awakened by a noise like the humming of insects. I tried to rise, only to discover my arms and legs fastened securely to the ground, and my hair tied down in the same manner. At once I became aware of something alive moving on my leg, advancing gently forward over my breast, walking boldly up to my chin. By bending my eyes downward, I was able to perceive that it was a human creature, not 6 inches high, with a bow and arrow in its hands. And even while I looked, at least 50 more of the same kind followed the first. It gradually became clear to me that it was these tiny creatures who had made me a prisoner, who had bound me securely while I slept with cords no thicker than a thread of silk. The Lilliputians, for that was the name my tiny captors were called by, brought me food and drink sent thither by their emperor's orders, freeing one of my hands so that I could eat. I topped off my meal with a hogshead of good wine, then fell asleep. While I slept, I was bound in chains and carted by 1,500 horses to the palace of the emperor. One or two of the articles proposed were not altogether to my liking, but overwhelmed by the presence of royalty, I could only prostrate myself at His Majesty's feet and acquiesce. Impressed by my gentleness and good behavior, the Emperor set me free. He then had a mind to entertain me with one of his country's best-loved shows. Bedressel, his Minister of Private Affairs, ascended to my shoulder to interpret the performance for me. Why, he's splendid. Magnificent. Tell me, how do your people acquire such skill?
They are trained in the arts and they're useful. You see, in Middlefax, when a wedding was offered to the state, Kennedy was taken the emperor to entertain the court by cutting capers on a rope. Whoever jumps the highest without falling off wins the office. That's Slim, that candidate for the office of traitor, performing now.
He's superb. Colossal. He's a sensation.
He should be. He's been at it for years. What is it? Why do you frown? Get
out! It just occurred to me. Is this rope dancing really a true test of a man's qualifications for public office?
Perhaps they have thought of a better test in your country?
My first impression of the kingdom of Lilliput was that I had never beheld a more entertaining prospect. The country around was a continual flower garden. The towns like the painted scene of a city in the theater. Surely, I thought, in this setting of ideal loveliness, these tiny doll-like people, so energetic, so resourceful, must have attained a state of happiness and perfection that we larger mortals only dream of. But I was doomed to disillusion. I had been there scarcely a month when my friend Redressel claimed to climb up on my shoulder and began to whisper in my ear. Speak louder, Redressel. I can't hear you.
Oh, matters of state have to be whispered. It would never do to let the people know what's going on.
What is going on?
We labor under two mighty evils. A violent schism at home.
A schism? Here in Lilliput?
For above 70 moons past, there have been two struggling parties here. The Tramic fans and the Silent fans.
How do they differ politically?
Most profoundly. One party adheres to the wearing of high-heeled shoes. The other, low-heeled.
High and low heel.
His Majesty favors lesser heels in his administration. Therefore, the animosity of the two parties runs so high, they will neither eat nor drink with each other.
Is there no hope of a compromise?
Neither party will yield a fraction. Thus, the country is split in two. And at the same time, we are threatened with an invasion from the island of Blefuscu.
Blefuscu?
A neighboring kingdom with which we have been engaged in a most obstinate war for 6 and 30 moons.
6 and 30 moons. Amazing. Even in Europe, we are not often able to sustain our wars that long. What started your war with the Blefuscudian?
An egg.
An egg?
Now, it's allowed on all hands that the natural way of cracking a boiled egg is upon the larger end.
Naturally.
The present emperor's great-grandfather, however, during his reign, published an edict commanding all his subjects to break the smaller end of the egg. The people so resented this that there have been 6 rebellious uprisings, wherein one emperor lost his life, another his crown.
But how does this matter of the egg affect your country's relations with the Blefuscudians?
The monarchs of Blefuscu find it to their advantage to foment these civil strifes, even sending their spies amongst us.
But what of your scholars and philosophers? You are a rational people. Cannot it be made clear to you the futility of such conflicts?
Many hundreds of volumes have been published upon the subject. But the emperor has ordered all books that do not support the little Indian point of view suppressed. Burned.
I see. Now, one more thing. Are the majority of the Lilliputians with the king on the matter of the egg?
Many of them, I'm afraid, have no political opinions at all, as long as they get their eggs. Meanwhile, the enemy has already equipped a numerous fleet and is preparing to descend upon us.
If there is anything I can do.
His Majesty is placing great confidence in your strength and valor.
I am greatly flattered. Please present my humble duty to His Majesty and let him know that I stand ready with my life to defend his person and state against invaders. When the hour of invasion was at hand, I waded out into the channel between Lilliput and Blefuscu, cut the moorings of the enemy's fleet, tied the ship's lines together, then waded back again with the enemy vessels in tow. The whole kingdom of Lilliput awaited on the shore to do me honor. But alas, I was to learn how fickle is the public mind, how short-lived the hero's laurels. Early the next morning...
I have come under express orders from His Majesty.
What does he want now?
He wants you to bring all the rest of the enemy ships into our port at once.
But great heavens, that would leave the Empire of Blefuscu entirely undefended.
Exactly. His Majesty proposes to reduce that miserable kingdom to a province and govern it by a viceroy.
He can't be serious.
He says it's our national destiny to rule the world.
Then he is out of his mind.
Not only does he intend to conquer Blefuscu, but he is laying plans to destroy the entire race of big Indians and compel all people
to break their eggs on the smaller end.
And if they refuse?
They will be exterminated.
You may return to His Majesty and say that I refuse his request. I shall never be the instrument of bringing a race of free and brave people into slavery. What is it, Redressel? Did you give the Emperor my message?
Man Mounted, you must leave Littlefoot at once.
What do you mean?
Listen, His Majesty is angry, most angry at your refusal. He has informed the people that you are a traitor. Articles of impeachment have already been prepared against you, and the populace is clamoring for your death. But His Majesty has decided against that. His intention is to blind you instead.
Blind me?
By having 20 of his men discharge arrows into your eyeballs. Oh, he's clever, is His Majesty. He recognizes that the loss of your sight will in no wise impair your bodily strength. You will still be useful to him. In fact, he feels you'll be even of greater service to him, blind.
What a low, contemptible, treacherous, selfish race you are that you... But you, Redressel, why are you here?
I could not bear to think of you reduced to this state of shame. You, my friend...
You must have come to warn me at great risk.
The risk of my life.
I am deeply grateful to you. Not only have you saved my eyesight, but you have done me a far greater service. Because of you, I can still believe in men. Even in Lilliput, among as low specimens of humanity as I have yet encountered. You have proved to me there are those who are not governed alone by self-interest. I shall not depart from your country entirely cynical. I shall not trouble you with an account of my escape from Lilliput and my eventual return to England. Suffice it to say, my insatiable desire of seeing foreign places would suffer me to continue at home but a short while. My next voyage, after many misadventures, brought me to the kingdom of the Brobdingnagians, a race of giants as tall as steeplespires, whose voices roared like waterfalls. Among these giants, I was looked upon as a freak. At the court, my lot was intolerably humiliating. My behavior occasioned gales of laughter, and I became obsessed with the idea of proving to the king and his court that I was indeed a man. And at length, I hit upon a way to accomplish this. I offered to reveal to the king the secret of an invention that up to this time is the most significant achievement of my race.
Tell me, my diminutive friend... What is this wonderful invention?
Well, sire, between 300 and 400 years ago, there was compounded a certain powder, which, when kindled, will fly up into the air with a noise and agitation greater than thunder.
What a diverting idea for feast days and celebrations.
But wait, your majesty. Ram the proper quantity of this powder into a hollow tube of brass or iron, and it will drive a ball of lead with such violence and speed that nothing can sustain its force.
But might that not be destructive?
It will rip up pavements, tear houses to pieces, lay waste cities, dash out the brains of all who are near.
And what would I want with it?
You could become the master of the lives, liberties, and fortunes of all your people. Whoever disputed your absolute authority could be...
And are you too ignorant to understand that I neither have nor want... absolute authority? I would rather lose my kingdom 1,000 times over than to know your dreadful secret. Some evil genius, some enemy of mankind, must have been the first contriver of this powder. If you value your life, never mention it again.
As you will, sire. But it is plain to be seen that here you have not reduced politics and the conquest of power to an exact science, as the more acute wits of Europe have done.
Power. Politics. It is my opinion that whosoever can make 2 ears of corn or 2 blades of grass to grow where only 1 grew before deserves better of mankind, does more essential service to his country than the whole race of politicians put together.
I was forced to conclude that the king's narrowness of view was the miserably perverted effect of a limited education. More than ever now, I long to be among my own kind, among those with whom I could converse on equal terms. Deliverance came sooner than I expected. One day, while I was sunning myself on the beach, an eagle picked me up in his beak, carried me many miles out to sea, then dropped me. I was rescued from the waves by Captain Thomas Wilcox, a worthy Shropshire man. But such is my restless nature that I had not been at home 10 days before.
Mend the captain and cast off the stern line.
Aye, aye, sir.
Yes, I was embarked upon another voyage. And it is part of my strange destiny that in time I should have found myself cut adrift by pirates, and subsequently saved by the inhabitants of Laputa. Now, Laputa is a most remarkable place, a flying island suspended several thousand feet above the heads of ordinary mortals. The Laputans, unlike the Brobdingnagians, are most scientific. Indeed, they are so wrapped up in intense speculation that they never enjoy a minute's peace. They jostle each other in the streets, bump heads, and are often in manifest danger of falling off the island. The really great thinkers among the Laputans do not walk about at all, however, but are shut away in an institution called the Grand Academy of Projectors. Being a great admirer of projects myself, I immediately asked to be allowed to visit this institution. At the great door, I was stopped.
Your pass. Show your identification pass, please. Very good. And your travel permit? All in order. Now, you leave the pink slip with me. The white you present to the coordinator of petal activities.
Where will I find the research laboratory?
1 mile down that corridor. Then turn left, then right, then left again.
And the agricultural project?
2 miles left at the opposite end of the building.
Thank you very much.
Yes, I'm the coordinator of all architectural projects. It was I who first introduced the idea of beginning all buildings at the top and working down.
My friend, we're down to earth in here. Food is our business. Stuff of life, you know. I've just perfected a method of plowing so simple you'll wonder you did not think of it yourself. Now, the farmer plants his field with a crop of acorns, turns a drove of hogs loose in the fields. The hogs root for their feed and plow up the field. Simple, isn't it?
Our aim is to perfect a universal language. Now, I hold that by leaving out verbs in participles...
Nonsense, Professor X. You're only wasting your time with minor changes of that sort. I propose that we abolish words altogether.
Oh, unthinkable.
Abolish words altogether and carry about in a sack on our backs such objects as are necessary to express a thought. There's your universal language.
Oh, no, 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 no. You can't do it. You can't do it, I tell you. They won't let you do away with words.
Who won't let me, pray?
Oh, the women, the women.
The School of Political Projectors, right through that door.
I propose that as a solution to all political problems, we endeavor to persuade the people to choose leaders for their wisdom, capacity, and virtue. That we teach office holders to consult the public good. That we reward merit, ability, and eminent service. And exhort leaders to place their own interests on the level of that of their people.
I protest! This man is a radical!
Except for the fantastic ideas I heard expounded in the School of Political Projectors, I must say I was impressed with the Grand Academy of Laputa. The only inconvenience is that none of the projects of any of the projectors has yet been brought to perfection. And in the meantime, the whole country lies miserably waste, the houses in ruins, and the people without food and clothes. However, I dare say, in time, they will get around to doing something about that, too. I come now to the last of my travels, and to that part of my voyages which is most likely to test the listener's credulity. Not because these adventures took place in a country where horses, called in that land Winnims, are the masters, and men, called Yahoos, are the beast of burden, but rather because of the profound difference between their conception of good and evil and our own. It took me the better part of a year to gain sufficient respect from the Winnim at whose home I stayed for him to discuss these matters with me. For at first, he considered me only a cleaner and a slightly more rational Yahoo than those he kept in his stable. The whole race of Yahoos, he insisted, were the most treacherous and irrational of all brutes.
All you need do is throw among 5 Yahoos as much food as would be sufficient for 50. Instead of eating peaceably, they will fall to quarreling and fighting, each single one determined to have it all to himself.
I'm afraid the Yahoos of my own country are inclined toward similar behavior.
And yet, do you tell me that in your country, the Yahoos are the masters, and the Winnims the beasts of burden?
Amongst us, we have wonderful things, such as you Winnims have never dreamed of. Magnificent castles, gorgeous clothing, the noblest, most costly meats and drinks. Our ships go to the ends of the earth to bring these luxuries back for the rich.
Rich? What is rich?
A rich Yahoo is one who has enough money to buy these luxuries I have described.
Then they are not free to all?
Oh, by no means.
How many of your Yahoos do enjoy them?
About 1 in every 1,000, I should say. The bulk of our people live miserably by laboring every day for small wages.
What you say amazes me. Now, among us, it is our supposition that all animals have a title to their share in the productions of the earth. Tell me, those Yahoos who do not have the luxuries you describe, how do they feel?
They are in a continual ferment of endeavor to earn sufficient money to live as the rich do.
And of what does this endeavor consist?
There are numerous kinds. Begging, robbing, stealing, cheating, flattering, forging, gaming, voting, libeling, scribbling, stargazing. Then there are the recognized professions, of course, like doctoring.
Please explain.
Well, it is part of our civilization that we eat when we are not hungry, drink without provocation of thirst, sit whole nights imbibing strong liquor.
Most extraordinary.
All of which disposes us to sloth, inflames our bodies, and prevents digestion, which makes the profession of doctoring the most lucrative one amongst us Yahoos. But I must tell you of another profession, the law.
Law?
Listen well, for this profession has a peculiar jargon of its own that no other mortal can understand, which they take special care to multiply so that it will take 30 years to decide whether a field left me by my ancestors belongs to me or to a stranger 300 miles away.
Oh, please, spare me. I do not feel equal to hearing about the law today. To be frank, your whole discourse has only increased my abhorrence for the whole species of Yahoos. The Yahoos of your country, you say, pretend to reason. Instead of reason, it seems to me, you are possessed only of some quality fitted to increase your natural vices. Do you realize that for all your fine words, you have never mentioned the one word we prize most deeply? Love?
Love?
It is the law of our land. We need no other. Amongst us, love is not confined to any particular object, but universal to the whole race. We show the same affection for our neighbor's issue as for our own. And wherever a Winnim goes, to whatever part of our land, he looks upon that as his home. Thus we live together without conflict, in peace and happiness.
Peace and happiness. Now you are using words with which I am not familiar. But in time, dwelling amongst the Winnims, I was to learn the full meaning of peace and happiness. I enjoyed perfect health of mind and body. I did not feel the treachery or inconstancy of a friend. I had no occasion of bribing or flattering to procure the favor of a great man or his minion. I wanted no fence against fraud or oppression. In the midst of all this happiness, and when I looked upon myself to be fully settled for life, my host sent for me one morning, a little earlier than his usual.
It is with great sorrow that I must tell you what I must. You will have to leave us.
Leave you? Go from this peaceful country?
Oh, no. Not that.
Don't send me away.
It is the opinion of the majority of the Rinnums that we jeopardize our well-being by keeping you here. It is feared that you, since you have the rudiments of reason, added to the natural depravity of a Yahoo, that you may influence the other Yahoos to rise up against us.
A thought of that kind never entered my mind, I swear it. I'm happy here with you. I wish to live out the balance of my days without striving or conflict.
So I told the other Rinnums, but they replied that you yourself had told us that your kind excels in the art of lying and dissimulation. How can you be trusted? You must go.
The Wynnums allowed me the space of 2 months to build myself a boat. When the day came for my departure, my host, with several of his neighbors, escorted me to the shore. When the wind was right, I set my little sail. My host and the others continued on the shore till I was out of sight and far, far out at sea. With flowing tears and heart sunk in grief, I heard their last farewell. Thus, gentle listener, I have given thee a faithful account of my travels for 16 years and above 7 months. Wherein I have not been as studious of ornament as of truth. I could perhaps have astounded thee with strange, improbable tales, but I chose to relate plain matter of fact in manner and style. It is my belief that a traveler's chief aim should be not to form wonderful descriptions of both land and sea, but to make men wiser and better.
Gulliver's Travels by Jonathan Swift is one of the world's great novels, brought to you each week by the NBC University of the Air. Listen next week for the first of a 4-part radio edition of The Brothers Karamazov by Dostoevsky. And remember that these and countless other great books are to be had in your local public library. To enhance your enjoyment of these broadcasts, NBC offers you Herbert Gorman's Handbook of the World's Great Novels. Just send 25 cents with your request to World's Great Novels, Post Office Box 30, Station J, New York 27, New York. That's World's Great Novels, Post Office Box 30, Station J, New York 27. Gulliver's Travels was adapted for radio by Frank Wells. The music was composed by Leo Kempinski of the orchestra directed by Bernard Berkowitz. The entire production was under the direction of Homer Heck. Gulliver was played by Harry Elders, the Lilliputian by Johnny Coons, the King of the Brobdingnagians by Leo Curley, and the Winnim by Kurt Kupfer. Others were Sidney Elstrom, Wiley Hancock, George Kluge, Burr Lee, Ted Liss, Cliff Norton, and Ray Suber. And this is Dave Garraway. The program came to you from Chicago, and was a presentation of the National Broadcasting Company and its independent affiliated stations. Peace just doesn't happen. It must be worked for and maintained. That is why Congress has authorized the largest peacetime army in American history. And remember, you have to be good to be in the regular army today. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.